apologize, everyone. We had some last-minute issues with our agenda. We will open today with a work session on Senate Bill 324. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 324 comes to you from Senator Walker, and you have the dash two amendments in front of you, which would basically allow a public body to enter into a settlement of compromise that requires the terms and conditions be confidential. Federal law requires confidentiality, but limits confidentiality provisions solely to those matters federal law requires to be confidential. It allows the court to order terms and conditions of settlement of compromise to be confidential. If the court finds the terms and conditions may reveal the identity of a person who is a victim of sexual abuse or who is 18 years of age or under, and the court determines by written finding that specific privacy interests of the person outweigh the public's interest in the terms and conditions. These are the dash two amendments that I'm referring to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You may remember the other day we had discussions about the dash one, and Senator Walker asked for additional time to work out some minor changes in the language with the Department of Justice, and I talked to her earlier, and she said that she had met with Kevin Neely, and they had accomplished that purpose.
Okay, we have dash three amendments here.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Walker might need some oxygen.
Senator Walker, are you trying to be a late winner of the pedometer contest?
Dash three.
Yeah, you know what? I picked up my bills from the floor instead of my committee bills. But I know this bill by heart, Madam Chair.
Senator Walker, let me throw a little space here while you catch your breath. The council just went over the dash two amendments, and then I looked in my pile, and we have a dash three amendment. And so I wanted to know which one reflects the work that you've done on this.
Madam Chair, I can answer that. And I thank my committee for being so helpful. I got water and I got a bill, and my staff brought me my bill files. It is the dash three.
That's what I
Madam
thought.
Chair, and let me just state that we made changes to lines 22 through 24, and on the second page.
Okay, run that by again, Senator Walker.
The change was to lines 22 through 24 on the first page, and line one on the second page. So we have now said a court may order that the terms or conditions of a settlement or compromise that reveal the identity of a person be confidential if, and it's a two-part test, so I think it addresses Senator Byers' concern. The person whose identity is revealed is a victim of sexual abuse or is under 18 years of age, and the second part of the test is B, the court determines by written findings that the specific privacy interests of the person outweigh the public's interest in the terms or conditions. So we will leave the person's name private, but the information about the settlement will not be. And that's only in cases of sex abuse.
I'm just wondering why, I guess they had to phrase it this way, because sometimes someone can be identified even without their name.
Correct.
Okay, all right. Senator Starr, do you have an opinion on the dash three amendments?
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Byers.
We need to make sure we're accurate for the record here. The Senator Walker just said it's only in the case of sex abuse. I don't think that's accurate. I think it's people under the age of 18 or sex abuse.
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry, you're absolutely correct. I've now caught my breath and my brains, and you're right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I would move the dash three amendments.
Senator Starr has moved the dash three amendment to Senate Bill 324. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 324 is amended to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Bill 324 is amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker, would you like to carry this little...
I would love to, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the committee's indulgence in trying to get this right, and I know Oregon thanks you.
No, the committee appreciates your continued work on this, so it's mutual, Senator Walker. Okay, now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 243. Other counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 243 is returning to us. It is the bill that would amend the statute related to the conditions of post-prison supervision and parole on individuals who have been convicted of sex crimes. The bill came to us because the current statute states that there is a prohibition from such persons frequenting, is the word used, frequenting without prior written approval a place where persons under the age of 18 regularly congregate. And there was a case out of the Court of Appeals that interpreted the word frequenting to mean often, and the bill came to us from the Board of Parole Board asking us to change the word frequenting to be present at. The committee voiced concerns about notice and due process, potential vagueness as well, with the original language of the bill, and the amendments have gone through a few iterations, and the latest one is the -4 amendment that is in your packet. And what the -4 does is really creates two prohibitions on individuals convicted of sex offenses. The first prohibition is a prohibition from being present at or near the grounds of a school, child care center, playground, or place intended primarily for use by children without prior written approval of a post-prison supervision officer. Excuse me. The -4 also deletes the word frequenting in the current statute and replaces it with the term being present at more than once. So the measure before you would prohibit a convicted sex offender as a condition of post-prison supervision or parole from being present even one time ever at a school, child care center, playground, or other place primarily to be used by children, and it would prohibit the same individuals from being present more than once at a place where persons under the age of 18 regularly congregate, both without prior written approval.
Okay, thank you, counsel. We have Mr. Washington in the audience if we need help on anything. Does anybody have any questions of him or counsel? Okay, Senator Starr, we have a -4 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move -4 amendment to Senate Bill 243.
Senator Starr has moved the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 243. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 243 as amended to the floor with the fast recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 243 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Krasinski.
Just want to put on the record, my understanding is that the parties have agreed to the terms, and this is how it's going to be presented and go through on the House side, that we're not going to see attempt to modify what this committee's done.
I certainly hope not, Senator Krasinski, because it was my intention that the parties work together to get a compromise on this.
Thank you.
I see nods from the audience. Thank you for getting that on the record. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Krasinski, would you like to carry that?
It'd be a pleasure.
Okay, now, everybody fasten their seat belts. We are going to open a work session on Senate Bill 99.
I knew it. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 99 comes to you from the Department of Human Resources, Human Services, and the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. And what the bill does allows a health care provider, a health care insurer, to retain genetic information of an individual without obtaining permission from the individual. We have the -1 amendments, which make it unlawful employment practice for an employer to obtain or use for the purpose of discrimination genetic information. And then you have the -2 amendments, allow a health care provider to use and disclose diagnostic and treatment information in accordance with ORS 192.520, which is the base law for this. Does not allow a health care insurer to use information obtained for a diagnostic test from DNA for setting rates.
Okay, and we have Betsy Earls and Carrie Sylvie who are here to discuss these amendments in the bill. So if you would come up, please. This is a particularly thorny little bill we have here. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Sylvie, you were here on the -1 amendment, is that correct?
Correct.
Would you run over what...
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Barr.
I don't seem to have a -2 amendment. I wanted to... The rest of the committee has it.
All do, Senator Byrne.
I do. Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's start with the dash one. Welcome to committee. If you could identify yourself for the record.
I'm Mary Stovey, and I am a genetic counselor. I work for CDRC and Oregon Health and Science University, and also I work with DHS in the genetics program.
Thank you. So why don't you just go over what the intent of the dash one is?
Madam Chair, the dash one amendment does several things. It prevents employers from using information about the family medical history of a person in employment decisions. And it also prevents the use of whether or not a person has gone for genetic counseling or other genetic services in employment decisions. It also prevents health insurers from underwriting individual policies or using family history for underwriting individual policies, and also whether or not a person has gone or sought genetic counseling or other genetic services. So it does not impact whether a health insurer can underwrite insurance based on the health of the person, only based on their family history.
Thank you very much. Committee, I asked for these amendments to just try to provide a little bit more clarity on some of the protections on this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that is that all of us have predispositions for genetic conditions, and all of us have family histories of genetic conditions. And right now, the way things are is that people who have sought to understand what their risk might be, or people who have had any testing or done anything to try to prevent getting a condition, are penalized, where people who haven't done anything to find out about it or prevent getting sick right now are more protected.
What do you mean they're penalized? Under existing law, they're penalized?
Well, that right now, as I understand it, when an individual applies for an individual policy, the insurance company can ask them to fill out the insurance division's form for insurance, and right now on that form there's not anything specific to family history. However, if the insurer receives information about that person's family history, it's not illegal for them to underwrite insurance based on that.
And this would make it illegal.
Right.
Okay.
And we do not think that this will have a significant impact on the insurance companies as far as adverse selection. And the reason why is because all of us are at risk for one or more conditions. And so it would basically keep the risk for the insurance company constant across the companies.
Thank you. Ms. Earls, would you like to go over the... Oh, first of all, are there questions on the dash ones from the committee? Thank you. Ms. Earls, dash two.
Oh, I think...
This seems to expand the bill quite a bit. In section two, under B... This would prevent the unlawful employment practice for an employer to seek or obtain any of the following or distinguish between, discriminate against, or restrict any right or benefit, otherwise, other yada yada, information pertaining to the occurrence of a medical condition or disease of a blood relative of employee or prospective employee. That seems overly restrictive to me. It has nothing that doesn't say anything about genetic disease. Suddenly, we're talking about any disease here.
Excuse me, I get distracted for a second. You're talking about page 1, line 22?
24.
information. That is a little bit, I mean, I'm very comfortable with that in there, but what was the reason for putting that in?
Madam Chair, the reason, or Senator Whitsitt, that's in there is that when the legislation was originally passed, what we generally understood was that a few conditions are genetic, and now what we understand is that almost every condition is genetic in some way, either 100% genetic or partially genetic. So like for heart disease, for example, it's a combination of what you inherit and then also what your lifestyle is. And so there's no practical way now to determine what conditions are genetic and what conditions are not genetic. And most of the new information is on adult onset conditions like diabetes or heart disease that have a significant genetic component, but you couldn't just make a list of genetic conditions.
Madam Chair, are you suggesting that tuberculosis has a genetic makeup?
Yep, because people, we have about 20 or 30,000 genes, and
I'm aware of that. But
right, so some of those genes, for example, determine how we make make antibodies, and so some people are going to be susceptible to that, and that's it's actually, in my opinion, it's Senator Whitsitt, that's not a stretch at all. So, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that is a stretch.
Well, but this is...
It's a quantum leap.
But this is simply saying that you can't, you know, discriminate against somebody in hiring if their brother has heart disease. You know, saying, well, they've got heart disease, therefore I don't want to hire somebody who also might have heart disease. I mean... Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, ma'am, when I'm looking at lines 16 through 21, and I'm looking at current law, there's unlawful employment practice for employer to seek to obtain, or to use the genetic information of an employee or prospective employer or blood relative of the employer, prospective employee. So what are you telling me is that their medical history is basically genetic?
It's partially genetic. Right now, the definition of genetic information in our statutes is results of a genetic test or a test on something else that's actually a test rather than any kind of medical diagnostic information. So the law treats diagnoses that are made by a physician based on clinical symptoms differently than a diagnosis that's based on a blood test or a genetic test.
Okay. So, for example, if I were to tell you that my father's blood type was O, wouldn't that be genetic information?
Yep.
I don't know if it was O negative or O positive, but that's mm-hmm. what it was.
Yep, because according to the definition of our law, any test that's done to look at a gene or a chromosome or a protein in certain circumstances would be considered a genetic test.
Thanks.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering on this, the blood relative piece, the using the disease itself. I'm just wondering if that is an existing law that they took out somewhere and had to put back in. Isn't that existing law already?
My understanding is that it is not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, any other questions? Okie dokie. Let's hear about Dash 2 Amendment, and then we will figure out what to do with these.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's good to see you back on this very enlightening bill, Senate Bill 99. I wanted to talk with you a little
Could
bit
you
about...
identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry, Betsy Earls, Kaiser Permanente. I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the Dash 2 amendments. When we originally brought Senate Bill 99 before you, it allowed providers and insurers to retain and use genetic information, including the genetic test. It allowed those entities to keep that information in people's files, keep and retain. The committee expressed quite a bit of concern with the idea of allowing the results of people's genetic tests to remain in a file, you know, written down, and I suppose subject to possible confidentiality breach or something like that. So what we did with the Dash 2 amendments is change that so that in a person's file, an insurer or a provider can keep information that flows from a genetic test, such as diagnostic or treatment information. That can be written down and kept in files, but not the actual test itself, not the results of the actual test itself. So that puts diagnosis and treatment information that flows from a genetic test on the same basis as diagnosis and treatment information that would flow from a clinical examination.
And without any indication of which is which in the file.
Exactly. I mean, I think that somebody who's educated about these matters could look at a file and say, oh, they had a blood test. That was a, you know, genetic test. But it wouldn't have the results of the blood test sitting in that file so that somebody else could come along, look at the results, and interpret something else, you know, about a person. It would only have diagnosis and treatment information in the file.
And it also would not have the fact that they'd had a genetic test in the file. Is that correct?
I don't believe so, Madam Chair. I think it would have what... I believe that's the case, correct.
Okay. Now, okay, anything else about these that you wanted to...
Well, Mr. Taylor also mentioned that there was some concern among the committee members that the diagnosis and treatment, the information that was being retained would be somehow used by insurance companies for underwriting purposes. That's against the law right now, but just to make it doubly clear that insurance companies are not allowed to use that information for underwriting, we put in subsection 4, this section may not be construed to allow a health insurer, I'm sorry, in subparagraph 2B, as used in paragraph A of the subsection, healthcare operations does not include underwriting activities. And that makes it clear that an insurer may not use any diagnosis or treatment information resulting from a genetic test for underwriting activities.
Okay. Okay, are there any questions from the committee? Senator Pazanski.
It's really back on the dash. I think it is the dash twos. Let's see, on line 9 on page 1, it talks about healthcare operations. Is that term defined?
Madam Chair and Senator Pazanski, healthcare operations is defined in the law already. And one of the things that's in that definition is underwriting activities. And so for purposes of this law, that underwriting activities is removed. So that genetic information more clearly can't be used for underwriting activities.
Maybe I'm misreading this, but when I read that sub 2 starting on page 1, line 5, it doesn't look like it is prohibiting it from being used for that purpose. Am I misreading it?
Are you on page 1?
I am on page 1.
Okay, page 1, line 5.
Starting on line 5, that's where it starts, but on the end of that paragraph, lines 9 and 10, it has the term healthcare operations. And the way I'm reading it, it says notwithstanding that ORS, the healthcare provider may, in fact, keep that stuff for those purposes. And that's what it seems like.
Sure.
It says one thing, but we're hearing testimony that it doesn't. And I wonder if that was a mistake.
Well, no. Madam Chair, Senator Pazanski, the first part of the bill, which is... on page 1 has to do with healthcare providers, which is doctors and nurses and people like that.
Okay.
And the second part of the bill deals with insurers and what they can and can't use and what.
Okay, and so again, the healthcare operations is defined to, doesn't that go to the insurance part, or is that just for billing purposes?
We'll look over on page 2, line 7. Healthcare operations,
okay.
Right, for purposes of insurer activity.
Could you again tell us what healthcare operations includes besides the underwriting activities generally?
It doesn't include.
Madam Chair, Senator Pazanski, it's a long list, and I don't have it with me, but I will tell you that a lot of what Kaiser Permanente, my client, is interested in as far as healthcare operations goes is peer review, quality assessment, that kind of activity.
I just want to get some stuff on the record as to what it means besides underwriting.
Our big concern is that kind of quality management and peer review type of stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you. Council, did you have a question?
Well, he's going to do the first.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from the committee? All right. You seem to provide little additional levels of protection from the first version. This is going to be a continually evolving process. I personally am comfortable with the point that Senator Whitsitt brought up, which is not using the fact that you have a blood relative with a condition to discriminate against someone in employment. But there may be division on that. So let's just, if committee members could kind of express their opinion on the Dash 1 amendment, so it would be helpful at this point. Senator Whitsitt.
Really, I'm very uncomfortable with that, what I consider a pretty large leap to consider that all diseases have a genetic origin. I mean, in one sense, that's sort of intuitive. On the other sense, to codify it into law seems to, or to with that intent at least, bothers me. I would have to give that some a little more thought. I think that's I was certainly not expecting to see something like that included in the bill, and so.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the intent of this is to establish that all diseases have genetic origins. I think this.
We've heard that testimony.
Well, but doesn't this just simply say that if somebody has a medical condition, you can't use that to discriminate in employment, mm-hmm. regardless of whether it has a genetic component? Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Senator Whitsitt, I was trying to use that as an explanation of the rationale for why it was in here, but not trying to say that piece of information, that most things, I believe, have a genetic component, should be part of the bill. I was trying to give it as background information.
Okay. I can support the bill, but I would in committee, but I would reserve the right to change my mind after further consideration.
As well, we all, I'm sure.
Madam Chair, I'm just kind of wondering, the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s, we have to choose between these?
No, they're...
Or are they compatible? I was checking to see that they were compatible, and they seem to be, in terms of leading lines.
Yeah.
Madam Chair?
Senator Beyer.
On the Dash 1, Senator Woods had brought up something I completely missed in the bill, an amendment, and... you know, I think that is a big expansion in 659 as an unlawful discrimination practices, and I'd have to, before I would support the Dash 1s, have some evidence presented that there's an issue, there's a problem that we're trying to solve. I've come, you know, in the past we've just talked specifically about genetic information in that section, and this is a huge expansion to go from genetic information to any or all diseases or medical conditions. I mean, that's not just a little jump. That's a quantum leap, I think, as Senator Whitsitt said. And I would have to be convinced that there is an issue, that there's, you know, there's a problem we're trying to fix before I'm willing to make that quantum leap.
Okay. Are there other comments on Senator Pazansky?
I'm going to try to get some clarification for the record regarding the Dash 1s. The purpose for bringing them forward is to broaden the base to make certain that individuals who may have some type of genetic information within their family could not be used against them in getting medical or employment. Is that the basis of this, or is it broader than that? Because I'm hearing two different things. It seems to me that if we're trying to make certain that someone's not unfairly discriminated against based on what might be within the genetics of their family. I'll just stop with that first and maybe continue depending on what your response is.
Madam Chair and Senator Krasanski, yes, the one caveat I would say is that our current statutes define genetic information very narrowly just as a result of the genetic test. And so what this does is protect family medical history, whether it's based on a genetic test or whether it's based on clinical information. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, please do.
I think we're just not tracking, because what I'm hearing is, from that response, at least what I think I'm hearing, is that we're going to protect the information about these individuals, but I didn't hear anything about that information is actually being limited to making certain that a person is not going to be discriminated against in the employment, as the chair has said. So I'm trying to get these tied together because I'm not sure what it means and what the purpose would be to protect the information from disclosure if it's not being used in, or what application it would be used in or not be allowed to be used in.
Madam Chair and Senator Krasanski, my understanding is that this is not part of the disclosure part of these statutes, and that I haven't been here before, so I'm not sure how much you've discussed this, but our statutes basically look at obtaining genetic information, retaining or disclosing it, and this specifically addresses just use of the information. So it relates both to employer use and also to health insurer underwriting just for individual policies.
Okay.
So does that answer your question?
I'm going to ask my follow-up one more.
Yeah, please.
So under that context, then when you gather this information regarding a particular individual, once you receive it, you can keep it, store it, but you cannot disseminate it in a way that would be used adversely against that person or their family for purposes of employment or for insurance?
I believe it only, my understanding is that it only affects the use of it. It does not change what whoever is holding that information might do as far as sending it to someone else or obtaining it. I think it only affects how it's used.
Since they're actually taking that and somehow applying, I'm not sure what that means.
Like use would be underwriting, for example. So in other words, an insurer to decide whether an individual might be offered insurance or what the cost of that insurance might be. That would be a use. I mean, that's what I'm thinking of as use.
I'm Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, that may be what she's thinking of as use, but this is an unlawful employment practice statute. This is 659, where this is being added into. Currently, it's limited to genetic information. I, as an employer, if I'm looking to hire one, if I have an employee, cannot use genetic information in any way, no matter how I get it, in and how I treat that employee to discharge them or hire them. If this was to pass in this form, the way I read it, is that if someone in that employee, and I'm a prospective employee's family, has ever had a heart attack, and I know that, and I don't hire that person, they would potentially have action against me as an employer for unlawful discrimination based on a hiring practice because someone in their family once had a heart attack. Whether I used that information or not in my decision to hire them, they would have action against me that I would have. They could bring me in the court and try to prove that I did not hire them because their father, their grandfather, their uncle, a blood relative at one point in time had any medical condition or disease. That is a quantum leap from using genetic information about that person or a blood relative. That is just, I mean, that's going from A to Z. And that's my objection now. I hadn't noticed that, and I think Senator Witsit for pointing it out.
Well, this is really tough because if you said if you tried to narrow it down, and for example, if someone in your employee's family had cystic fibrosis, which is clearly a genetic disease.
And that's covered in today's law. That's already covered.
Not really, because if you say you didn't have, you only had the diagnosis, you only had the fact of the disease, but the disease by that particular disease by definition is same with hemophilia, is a genetic disease, and so you know I don't know how you would parse out the ones that it's obvious that they're a genetic disease. I think that's the problem here. Some of them have genetic predisposition. And other ones are just plain a genetic disease, like hemophilia. Correct? Is that, you can see I'm not a geneticist, but so is that what you were trying to get at? Trying to.
And Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, also, I believe this dash one amendment would. There's two sections that would be amended. The first part is the employment, and the second part are insurance statutes.
And I'm concerned about the employment part in this context.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm also not an employment lawyer, but I mean, I think if they'd have to have more than just the fact that you didn't hire them to sue you for discrimination.
No, they'd have to have a. They may not win a lawsuit, but they can bring one against me, because it's not just for an employee, it's for a prospective employee.
Genetic information. I'm just wondering if this sub A, genetic information of the employee or a prospective employee or of a blood relative. I'm just wondering if that would cover the clearly genetically related diseases.
And sub A is already in current law if you look what's been removed above.
Yeah. No. Senator Walker, what do you think of this? Come on.
Well, I understand his concerns, but it already addresses the employee and prospective employee in the current law.
But it's limited to genetic information.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Not medical conditions or disease.
Well, what I'm thinking is that sub A, which is, as you point out, is just a reiteration of current law, sub A could arguably take into account things like hemophilia, things that are clearly 100% genetic. Is that,
yes,
is that your
Madam
interpretation?
Chair.
Well, I think I'm persuaded by this. I think
one thing when you're talking, in my opinion, when you're talking about insurance law and not being able to use medical conditions or family histories against the prohibitions of underwriting, it's another issue when you bring that into 659A, and which is employment practices.
Mm-hmm.
And as an employer, I mean that is huge. That is such a huge. Anytime I don't hire someone, I've opened myself to legal action. If I have any knowledge at all of any family history, medical history of them. I mean, you'd have to hire only complete strangers. You know nothing about their medical history or their family's medical history.
Madam Chair, I think I might have misspoke myself when you asked that last question. Could you repeat what you were asking, please?
My question was if an employer learned that somebody had a blood relative, say, with hemophilia, and discriminated against them on that basis, which is clearly a genetic disease, would that employee be covered by subsection A, the genetic information of the employee or prospective employee or of a blood relative?
And this would be in the amendment, Madam Chair, right? As
so
opposed to the current status?
Amendment.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Counsel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, going to the plain meaning of the statute, and I'm talking at 192.531, section 11, subsection 11, genetic information means information about an individual or the individual's blood relative obtained from a genetic test. So the way I read that in conjunction with a test, you would have to have it all.
Genetic test means a test for determining the presence or absence, this is subsection 14, of a genetic characteristic in an individual or the individual's blood relative. So the fact that someone had the disease of was a hemophiliac, absent a genetic test and absent the result of the genetic test, it wouldn't be covered.
But, I mean, on that, cystic fibrosis, hemophilia, those are genetic. You can only get them if you have the right genetics.
Right.
So, I mean, if you want to more tightly define to bring into genetic diseases into that part of without bringing into all other medical diseases, I think that's one issue. But this is a whole wider area than that. Because this, unless someone point out to me why this doesn't pertain to all medical conditions and diseases and not just genetic ones.
Senator Pisanski?
On the genetic information, I think Council has at least made it clear for me that the only way it would be applicable to Senator Beyer in the hiring is that he relied or he got the information from a test that was performed as compared to learning it from some other way. That takes care of, I think, that first part. The second part is still what I think we still need to work through. And I think Mr. Taylor may have more for us on that.
And Chairman, Mr. Cleaney, I'm just looking at this, and I don't know if it will do it, but say, for example, on 24, if information pertaining to the occurrence of a medical condition or disease of blood relative of the employee or prospective employee based solely on genetic, solely genetically based, it would be hard to do it here, but limiting just to those particular circumstances where it is hemophilia, it is the other disease that was mentioned, cystic fibrosis, and not on genetic predisposition. I don't know if that can be done, but that's just my thought.
Or you could put you could put a state of mind in there. I'm just brainstorming here, but information that the employer knows is genetically caused. In other words, not just that hemophilia is a genetic disease, but the employer knows it is. So that would provide another. Because if the employer didn't know, I mean, you didn't know, I'll bet, till today that cystic fibrosis was genetically caused, did you, Senator Beyer?
I absolutely did know that, Madam Chair. I know quite a few people who have cystic fibrosis, and in fact, I know one family that where the mother, the father was a known carrier of cystic fibrosis and had many siblings die and have the disease. The mother was adopted at birth and they had no idea. They have four children, and cystic fibrosis is a 25% chance if both parents are carriers, and their youngest child is had cystic fibrosis, just had a lung and liver, or lung and heart transplant, and they had no idea the mother was a carrier until the daughter was diagnosed. So, absolutely, I knew that one.
That's very sad. I didn't mean to stumble into that, Senator Beyer. I apologize. Well, that would be one way to do it, is to have it information pertaining to the occurrence of a genetically caused medical condition.
For my comfort, I think you'd be better off trying to fiddle with the words of what it is in the guise of a genetic information, genetic test, rather than bring in diseases and medical conditions. If you need to broaden the what is a genetic test or what is a genetic condition, rather than trying to narrow what is a disease or medical condition as to only genetics, it seems like that would increase my comfort level greatly. To deal with sub A and eliminate sub B.
Okay. I think this needs Senator Walker.
Yeah, I have a question, Madam Chair, about sub 3. It's on line 6 on page 2 of the dash 1 amendment. I'm not sure I'm reading it correctly. The section, subsection 2C, does not prohibit an employer from obtaining a medical evaluation of an employee or a prospective employee for a medical condition or disease for which the treatment or advice was recommended. What does that mean? That's telling me that the employer can get copies of your medical records.
Where did you start on this?
Line 6 on page 2 of the dash 1. Line 6 through 10.
but this isn't but this doesn't pertain to genetic tests.
I don't care what it pertains to. I mean, it says it doesn't prohibit them from obtaining a medical evaluation.
But if
for a medical condition or disease, why should an employer have that information about you?
Well, employers get that all the time, don't they?
No.
Madam Chair and Senator Walker, my understanding of the way the current statute is that an employer can require that an employee or a prospective employee have a genetic test if it is a, quote, bona fide requirement for the job. As far as I know, there aren't any of those that have actually been established yet, but that's what my understanding is our current law is. I do not think they can ask for medical records. I think what they, in other words, I don't think they can obtain, I don't think they have the right to request and obtain medical records, but they can require the employee to have a genetic test. And the employee has to give permission to have that genetic test. So that is, in my understanding, is in the current statutes.
I don't read that section to say that. I read that section to say that an employer can get a medical exam for you for any medical condition or disease.
And you should be able to. If you hire somebody, you should be able to find out.
Senator
Whitsitt? Okay. Madam Chair, I would think that that in all fairness to an employer, I mean, what we're trying to do here is to prevent an employer from going back into the record and using genetic information that has been compiled in the record against someone for the purpose of not employing them. And there certainly should be no prohibition of an employer asking for a medical examination for an employee prior to employing them. That's just in many situations, that's just part of the pre-screening employment, if you will. And I think that's perfectly legal and perfectly proper. But when they go back to the, I think what we're trying to prevent here is, my understanding what we're trying to prevent here is to prevent an employer from going back and obtaining genetic information, private genetic information, and using it.
Well, maybe I've not been, Madam Chair, maybe I've not been employed by an employer long. I mean, I've been self-employed for so many years, but I would never apply for a job where they made me get a medical exam when they got to see my medical record.
But a firefighter would.
Sure.
So there are public safety officers would. I can see cases where someone would have to show that they
are physically fit for the job.
Sure.
Yeah.
Look at a
stress test, all that.
Sure.
So, but this is open to any employer. So, if you just apply for a dime store job, I mean, why couldn't your employer ask you to get a medical test? I mean, they find out you have lung cancer and they don't hire you.
Senator Prezansky?
I'm wondering, it just seems like the committee's having a lot of time with trouble and struggling with this. I'm wondering if maybe we should try to get a better understanding of this. Not hear the hearing. It just seems to me that there's uncomfortness.
Well, there is, but that's why we're here. We're here to try to get clarification from our work group members. We'll just continue as long as it takes. Council.
Madam Chair, let me venture into this again and probably create more confusion. But once again, going back to those same lines, infant in page 124, then going on top of page 22, information pertaining to the occurrence of a medical condition or disease that is solely genetically based of a blood relative employee or prospective employee, and that what we would have to do in the legislative history, most appropriately on the Senate floor and the House floor, would be give examples of what is solely genetically based, hemophilia, the other one we mentioned, was it cystic fibrosis, and then also mention diseases that have a genetic component, for example, heart disease, but also involve lifestyle issues. So it's the environment. That's the only thought that I could give.
and that would then help define what solely genetically based means.
Well, but I liked actually Senator Byers' suggestion of dealing with the subsection A, trying to expand that a little bit rather than trying to narrow down subsection B. I think genetic information, if we can find a way to expand that to take into account some of these clearly genetically based diseases rather than trying to narrow down the other one. So if we get back to the the point that Senator Walker was making starting at line 6, that's really not genetic information at all, as I read it. Is that correct? That's
not sure. That's the way I read it. I just read it as regular medical information, and I just object to an employer being able to.
Right. But you're saying that that's existing law. So if we
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, there are some other parts of the employment statutes that make limitations about what employers can and can't do. And my understanding of why this was in there was basically to say that this law is not impacting the other parts of the statutes. So there's other, this isn't the whole statute about what employers can and can't do in a hiring.
Okay, what I'd like you to do is work with counsel and make sure that there's nothing new, because this amendment isn't ready to go. We're going to have to do some work on this. So if you would work with counsel and make sure that we're not introducing anything new in this line 6 through 10 material. And then we can have a separate discussion on whether we're happy with the requirement itself, Senator Walker, maybe in another bill at some long-distant time. because that is a very legitimate thing, and I wouldn't want to go farther than we are in existing law. That's not the purpose of this bill. So if you could do that, that would be great. Are there any other concerns by committee members before we...
I just want to put closure on the other one that Senator Beyer brought up. Is the chair also going to want that group to try to narrow, or not narrow B, but enhance A or whatever? Just to
either enhance A or either enhance A most likely, or I wouldn't rule out being able to do something with B, but not to include, not to be over inclusive. In other words, if we can get at it to get it only those diseases that are incontrovertibly solely genetic diseases. In other words, diseases that you'd have to have a genetic test, basically.
Madam Chair, I'd thought about this before, and we'd have to think about it some more, but I can't think of a way to frame conditions that are solely genetic,
right,
because we've got... And so... yes, we could try to figure it out, but I don't know. That's one of the reasons I think that the law is the way it is right now, is because we're now at the point where so many things are even purely genetic. And even the things we think of as purely genetic have other impacts.
Right.
So, for example, for heart disease, there are single gene conditions that cause heart disease that are purely genetic.
If you had
genetic.
Somebody with heart disease that was single gene, you would have to have a genetic test to determine that. That
no.
would, yes, because you would, because how could you tell the difference between that and a lifestyle heart disease?
Madam Chair, sometimes before we could do genetic tests, people made clinical diagnoses for things that we were sure were genetic. And so, for example, there's a condition that causes heart disease, hypercholesterolemia, which is one of the most common single genes. And the features of that, you have these bumps that you get on your elbows and your knees. You have heart attacks usually before you're 30 years old, and there's other features. And so we knew that that was a dominant genetic condition before there was ever a genetic test for it, and a geneticist or a cardiologist would make that diagnosis based on the clinical features. And there's also genetic conditions that we know are clearly genetic that it's not worth ordering a genetic test because you can make the diagnosis without the genetic test.
Right. Well, let's try to struggle with that and see if we can get to a little bit broader without being this broad. Senator Pisanski?
I guess I'm rereading B again, and if I'm reading it, my reading of it now is that basically the limitation is that you can't discriminate based on the blood relative of the employee or the prospective employee. And I wasn't sure if Senator Beyer was talking about that context as compared to the condition of the actual employee.
No, he was referring to that context. He was saying he's afraid that if he's interviewing somebody for a job and their brother has heart disease and he ends up not hiring the person, he's afraid he's going to get sued because he knew the brother had heart disease. That's what his concern is.
Or cystic fibrosis.
Or whatever. So he just doesn't want to be subject to legal liability. Is that how you understood it, Senator Whitsitt? Is that how you understood Senator Beyer's concern?
So if that's the case, then you're basically, I mean, it's almost like, I don't know how you protect the employer at any situation, because the bottom line is you always could have a prospective employee make an allegation that the decision that was made was based on any of these factors. And for us to try to somehow limit that ability to make that assertion, I'm not sure how we're going to get there. Maybe the work group can do it. It just seems to me that it really is going to come down to what it is today, is basically if someone is accusing a prospective employer of discriminating against them for whatever reason it might be, there's going to be that opportunity to let the person bring the case forward and the prospective employer to defend themselves.
Right, but right now it's not a cause of action.
For this particular stuff.
Yeah. May have to find some other reason to sue, aside from my brother has cancer.
So let's
try to struggle with this. We may not be able to get there in this bill in terms of the actual diseases, but I don't hear any controversy from the committee on using the genetic information itself. So if somebody got hold of genetic information and discriminated on the basis of that, then that would clearly be covered, but that's what the bill is for. So. Okay, is there any other concerns of the committee that we want resolved before we send this bill sailing into the sunset?
Well, not into the sunset. It would be the phoenix and the reason.
We want the sunset. We want sine die. No. Council.
We can discuss, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we can discuss the Dash 2 amendments? Or?
We already discussed the Dash 2 amendments. If there are any more concerns with the Dash 2 amendments, now is the time.
Now's the time to speak.
Any concerns with the Dash 2?
So.
Okay. All right, well, we will try one more time, and there are some other issues that we may try to deal with at that time that didn't come up today while we're at it. But we need to get this solved before we can send this bill out. And I really appreciate both of you coming down from Portland, especially for this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for continuing to work on this.
For the 87th time, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 99. And we had some problems with our agenda today, committee, so we are going to...
That's helpful.
265, a letter.
Council has a letter from Virginia Vanderbilt on Senate Bill 265, so we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 265.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You have had several times before Senate Bill 265 before you, and I'm talking to the
dash one amendments. We had this discussion before. This relates to the defense of trespass for a person who is on property for making personal service. The amendment we had, the dash one before us, Virginia Vanderbilt came up to my office yesterday to discuss it, and she reads the dash one amendment so that if a process server came onto the property, and we're assuming there's a no trespass sign, and she talks about this in her letter, and if that person was asked to leave, the dash one amendments would be a defense even if that person did not leave. And that would, could, Senator Pruszynski was raising the issue of what could happen from there. I give Laura Smith a note to, in behalf of the committee, to go down and to get an amendment for Legislative Council's office. And as you'll see from Virginia's letter, what the amendment would have done would add a provision saying that if the person was asked to leave, they would have to leave. Well, as Virginia points out, that would negate subsection 2. So we would be in a position of having not accomplished much, and it would be like a dog chasing its tail. I talked to Laura Smith briefly before the meeting, and when she testified before the committee before, what the problem seems to be is the a reluctance. Laura just walked in, Madam Chairman of the committee. a reluctance on the part of district attorneys and law enforcement officials to get involved in this issue, and one of the thoughts that we talked about was maybe a letter from the committee to the Oregon District Attorneys Association asking them to work with Laura's organization to better educate the District Attorneys of Oregon as to the problem the process service face here. I guess the problem we have is that we can't, it doesn't appear we can come up with a legislative solution.
This is one of those cases where we all understand the intent, and getting there is has not been easy. So we might we can discuss this after the hearing and consider a letter to the district attorneys.
I'm ready to make a motion for the letter if you want that.
Do we need a motion for a letter?
No. But I appreciate the work that council's done, and actually, LC, because when you put it all together, you're basically, as I've put on the record, I think putting a situation that it's just going to escalate. These type of situations are got to be very trying for the process server. I hope that they are able to work with the District Attorneys Association, and also maybe with the process servers as to teaching them, you know, maybe one, don't turn your back on these people, because if that's when that stuff's happening, it's very volatile. And I appreciate that we've reached the conclusion that to try to do something, we're going to basically cause a problem that they may be right by law, but they also may be seriously injured or dead.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. Okay, so we will close the work session on.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out the use of the term by Legislative Council of the phrase hunky dory.
Hunky dory.
As she was describing a process server's venture onto someone's property. I thought that was very cute, Ms. Vanderbilt, so thank you for that.
Good. If you're listening, Virginia, you just got called cute. Okay. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 265. And then we are going to move till Tuesday, Senate Bill 881, and then the others will be moved to some later point than Tuesday, so we will just regroup on those early next week. Senate Judiciary is adjourned.
Oh, yeah.